Welcome to the MadTech Podcast special from ExchangeWire, a weekly deep dive into a pressing industry issue.
Hello, and welcome to the MadTech Podcast from ExchangeWire. I'm John Still, ExchangeWire's head of content, and today I'm going to be joined by Alyssa and Nina from OMG Singapore. Nina, Alyssa, lovely to meet you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
No, you're very welcome. It's really good to have you on the show. And I'm really looking forward to getting into the details around CTV in the APAC region and some research that you guys have done recently. First off, though, I'm going to get you both to introduce yourself. So Nina, tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at OMG.
Yeah, I'll go first. Thanks again for having us. We're really excited to have the opportunity to be, you know, talking about the research today. So as you said, my name is Nina. I'm the Chief Enablement Officer for Omnicom Media Group Asia Pacific, based in Singapore and have been based in Singapore for the past 10 years with OMG. And I think my role is to, there's many hats, but one of the hats I'm wearing is to oversee research and insights. So I think that's where the CTV research comes in. Excited to be here and looking forward to our session.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining me. And Alyssa, tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do as well.
Hi. So thank you so much for having us again. And we're really excited to share this because we've been working on this for quite a while now. So I am Alyssa. I am a senior insights manager for OMG. But before that, my background really has been in market research. So this is kind of really something that I'm passionate about, like doing all these custom research for our agencies. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, then thank you very much for joining as well. Excellent. So I'm going to throw a big question out first, just to help us get a little bit of grounding in the subject. What is CTV? How do you define it? How can brands define it? I'll go to you first on that one, Nina.
We love the big questions, I think. So I think CTV is like strictly speaking, it is TVs that have, you know, that have built-in internet connections, or that is a TV with an internet capability, right? So could be built-in or a dongle. So I think that is the very strict definition of CTV. But I think it's a lot more than that when it comes to looking at it from a consumer's perspective. So, you know, consumers don't think in CTV language. That is really something that our industry thinks in. So I think consumers think video, everything that is, you know, online video, it's streaming, it is of course also CTV. But I think the definition is really one for the industry and not so much for the consumers. You know, we talk about the OTTs, the Netflix and the Amazon Primes in this world. We talk about online broadcasts, but we also talk a lot about, you know, video sharing platforms like YouTube, for example, where consumers have the opportunity to upload their content and really share it with a wider audience. So it's a lot more than just CTV when you actually look at it from a consumer's perspective.
Yeah, it's a fairly wide-ranging area. Alyssa, anything to add to that?
Just to build on to what Nina said, I think earlier on, online video was kind of, there were very clear cuts, right? Like YouTube and Dailymotion, they were the UGC platforms, online broadcast platforms like TFC for the Philippines. They used to be specifically like online broadcast where everything's just linear. It just happens to be online. And then over the past few years, it just became like everything, like YouTube. You can now rent movies on YouTube and online broadcast platforms. You can also actually watch videos on demand. And then on top of that, we also have the difference between SVOD and AVOD or FAST. And it's all just really kind of giving a lot for the layperson to navigate in terms of the realm of CTV.
Yeah, it's definitely a complicated one. It's one we spent quite a lot of time discussing, the, you know, the fragmentation of and how different things are. And we talk about it a lot with the kind of EMEA view of everything. What's the CTV landscape like in APAC, Alyssa? How do you feel? Is it growing? What's popular over there?
I would say it's, when it comes to how people generally think about CTV or OTT platforms, I would say like Netflix, Prime Video, etc., it's relatively unsaturated, especially when you compare it to the North Americas. But actually, I find that it's relatively self-sufficient, or maybe it's my bias since I'm also from APAC, right? I mean, first of all, we have Samsung and LG being one of the first CTV manufacturers. I think that was 2008 or 2009, and top 50% of the retail sales from the region, or even more actually, I believe probably around 60% is the more correct number. CTV sales or TV sales in general are coming from the region. And then we also have local and regional platforms being early movers. So around the time that the North Americas were having all these Netflixes, these Prime Videos, these Hulus, these Disneys, we were also building up our own local and regional platforms like Vue. I want to say Hotstar probably also started earlier on before it was acquired by Disney, etc.
Yeah, and I think there's a good point in there that it's easy to talk about APAC as a kind of region in itself, but also it's made up of a lot of different markets with a lot of individual tastes and their own, you know, viewing cultures. Nina, do you think, you know, are there many major differences among the markets, and how do people really watch video online in the different APAC markets?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's why we're also so pleased that we were able to manage and cover all these markets in our research, right? We covered more than 14 markets. And I think, as you said, the region is so, so diverse. I know that every region always says that, but I think APAC really is. You know, we included the entire ANZ region, which is Australia and New Zealand. It's obviously very English-speaking. We're Western. Then we included all of Southeast Asia, North Asia, but also the China-speaking markets, like obviously China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, but then also India, which is a massive market for us for CTV. And I think we see many, many differences in viewing behavior, right? We know we had a ranking in our research that looked at the numbers that consumers spend on online video streaming platforms, and the Philippines is just leading that ranking. And it's normally the Southeast Asian markets that are really leading this ranking for various reasons, right? And I think one of the reasons is also that a lot of these markets are, we always say, mobile first, but they're really mobile only markets, right? So a lot of the consumption happens on mobile devices. And I think, you know, we also talk about data packages and how they're getting cheaper and how they're getting larger. So it's a lot easier for these markets to also, you know, just watch more content. But we see a lot of differences and nuances also when it comes to the number of subscriptions across the region. So yeah, for us, it was really interesting and insightful to, and we were lucky that we covered all these markets in our research.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a really exciting area to have undertaken this research in. So tell me a little bit how it came about, and tell me about the research itself. We've got a few stats to dive into, but yeah, give us an overview about the project itself to start with.
So I think we, you know, last year in 2024, we all knew that it's a big thing, right? We all knew it's really, really important. But and we all had a good understanding as Omnicom Media Group in terms of the landscape when it came to the players. So we understood what are the players in each of our markets, what are the ad opportunities, what is the ad offering. I think what we were really lacking is understanding the consumers, right? So like I said earlier, the way the industry sometimes defines categories is not the way a consumer defines it. So we really wanted to dig into how is this entire landscape perceived from a consumer's point of view. So I think that was one big motivation for us. And that's why we really, you know, ventured out and asked more than 11,000 people in the region. And we conducted more than 11,000 interviews in the region across these 14 markets to really get the consumer's perspective. And I think the other reason was that we had, you know, pockets of information from different markets. And again, they were helpful. It's very, you know, useful information. But we didn't have that holistic understanding across our markets. And because we've done it on such a large scale, it now really allows us to compare markets where we would normally have no data in. So I think it was really these two key reasons that we wanted to understand the consumer, and we wanted to understand and have something that we can use across all our markets to then inform, obviously, our teams in these markets when it comes to planning and CTV strategies.
Yeah, it's an amazing undertaking. I mean, 11,000 people in 14 markets, it's a very comprehensive study. And I love the fact that, you know, you've put the consumer at the heart of this. It's, you know, a great way for an agency and for the wider industry to better understand how people see. I think we can all be guilty of talking of it in ad industry terms or agency terms. And it's great that you've gone out there and canvassed such a wide range of opinions on it. So I'm going to dig into a couple of the stats that have jumped out. This is one of my favorites, is that 87% of solo viewers still multitask when streaming videos. I do. I catch myself doing it all the time. I'll promise myself that I'll use 2 hours and sit and watch a film, and then I'll get 10 minutes in and all of a sudden I'm buying something on my phone or I'm looking at something else. So that one, that rang true for me very much. So what, while people are consuming CTV, what are they doing? What is the other multitasking and how is it working? Alyssa, let me know.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a no-brainer here, but people are mainly eating when they're watching videos. But I would say there's actually like different levels of distraction, right? I mean, when you're eating or when you're drinking while you're watching video, you're not really distracted. You're pretty much, even when you're watching in the cinemas, for example, you would be eating popcorn and drinking whatever pop it is at the soda fountain, right? But there's also socializing, which of course mostly happens if there's someone around, but there's actually people who would watch alone, but they still are on their phones talking or chatting with people online. And then of course there's people who are consuming other content, but sometimes these are supplementary content, which I'm personally guilty of. So for example, I'm watching this Star Wars series, for example, and I am scrolling through IMDb, checking who is this actress from? I kind of remember her. And then there's also people who are completely consuming completely unrelated content. So I believe eating is the main, second activity for people who are watching online. But they're also likely to consume other content. But the good thing is they're likely to consume other content that is supplementary to the video that they're watching. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just maybe for advertisers, it might just mean that we can make sure that we're activating cross-channel even during the show. Like we have presence on the video, but we also have presence in fandom spaces, for example. I want to pick up on also what you mentioned about this 87%, and that actually goes down if they're watching with others, because they're just more likely to socialize face-to-face when watching with others. But otherwise, all the other activities they're less likely to do.
Yeah, it's, like you said, there's a big opportunity there that armed with that knowledge that these are the activities that people are doing. And I'm similar to you, Alyssa. I will, I'll be watching a film and I'll all of a sudden see an actor I haven't thought about for 20 years. It's like, oh, well, I wonder what they were in. Where do I recognize them from? And it's so easy now. And, it's not necessarily a distraction, but it's supplemental to the entertainment that you're watching. As you mentioned, Alyssa, there's a difference between those who are watched solo and those who watch in a group. Nina, what are the differences there?
So I think the moment you have someone next to you, right, that's obviously you're very tempted to talk about the content that you see with that person in real time. But I also want to echo what Alyssa said. I think when she said, people are socializing even though they're watching alone, they're obviously socializing online, right? You're still very tempted to take your phone, like you said, and just text someone or, share your opinion or just get distracted, right? But I think when I watch with my partner, for example, you pick something up and you want to talk about it straight away and you have that person next to you that you can talk about it straight away. And then sometimes it's a good thing because you talk about the content, but sometimes also to your point, you're completely distracted from the content and you're like, hey, hold on a second, what's that person doing now? What happened to the follow-up from that movie? So I think it was really important for us to understand these nuances and have for our clients to have these learnings in terms of okay, where can we add value as a brand and where do we also need to acknowledge that consumers are distracted and how can we kind of bring them back? So there's a lot of learnings for us and our clients here, but generally co-viewing is very impactful. So we dedicated a big chunk of our research to co-viewing and when people watch with someone else. And there's massive, very interesting learnings in our research as well that, we find out people are more receptive to advertising when they're watching with someone else. Again, I think you can make the argument because they talk about it, right? And they're also more, more receptive to actually searching for products and buying products. So there's a lot of really, really interesting learning from our research that hopefully help our clients and shape the comm strategy for them.
Yeah, definitely. There's like I said before, a lot of opportunity in there, I think, for them. You've also split out intentional and deliberate viewing, which I found really, really interesting. What's that about and what can that do for brands as well? Elisa?
It's kind of almost a chicken and egg situation, intentional and deliberate viewership, how you are watching, or even coming back to what Nina was talking about earlier, who you're watching with. So we didn't ask directly, right, about are you intentionally watching? Are you just like watching when you're bored, etc. But there are some indications. So for example, 44% of people in APAC watch in transit during weekdays. So you can assume that everyone, or almost everyone of that 44% are probably just like, they're just bored during their 1 hour commute and have nothing to do. Fine, I'll pick up my phone, watch a couple of episodes of whatever, right? So there's that, but then there's also, like I mentioned, this 44% will likely be watching on their phone. So device also matters there. So you would think that people who tend to watch on their TV sets are more likely to be deliberate viewers. And of course, co-viewing is more likely to be a deliberate activity because it's not like everyone can like very impromptu just be like, hey guys, come over, let's watch some random episode. Of course, you have to be like, okay, on Saturday, 7 p.m., we're going to watch this new episode of this so-and-so-and-so. So there are a lot of factors that come into play, but also are being affected by the occasion that they're watching in, and also affect how they are receptive to content or even to advertisement. So for example, if you're bored, if you're not really planning on watching anything, of course you're gonna scroll on the home screen. I believe LG did research and they found that it's actually 11 minutes until they finally watch something. So, you know, it really affects their behavior, but also vice versa, their behavior also affects how they are viewing, or like what their mindset is when watching.
Yeah. So yeah, that notion of intent definitely, and this deliberate viewing, it's so interesting because it does affect your mindset. Nina, anything to add on that one, on those on intentional and deliberate?
Yeah, I think I just want to add one thing. So we also asked our consumers and our respondents, how do they feel about when before, during and after they're watching something? And the vast majority said that before they're watching something, they just feel bored, right? So I think some of the findings that we have, and, you know, we also asked them about the genre, for example, and it turns out the comedy is the number one genre that people watch. And I think a lot of the intentional and also deliberate decisions are because someone is bored, right? To Elisa's point, when you're sitting on the MRT, which is the public transport here in Singapore, and it's going to take me another 30 minutes to get to the office. It's just feelings of boredom that then have an action, right? And I think the other interesting thing that we found in our research is that 31% of the respondents said they have a scheduled viewing for the weekend. Now, that's a high number, right? But again, it fits into the whole, it's a deliberate decision. It's an intentional decision to sit down either by yourself or with someone and really, really watch something, which means you already made that plan before the weekend comes to sit down and watch something, which I find that quite interesting. And I find the number quite high.
Yeah, I say that's quite high. It feels often like those days are over where you have a certain time to sit and watch a TV program. Yeah. It's more now when you have the chance to sit down, maybe have in mind what you want to watch. But yeah, that is a high number. That's really interesting. So in terms of being receptive to advertising through CTV, what type of viewers are more receptive, do you think?
Like I said earlier, I think co-viewing definitely plays an important role here. And like I said earlier, we did find out that those that co-view are more receptive to advertising, which is, again, like I said earlier, it kind of feeds into, you know, you have the opportunity to talk to someone about it. And then it's also, you know, it can lead to, you know, more searches and to really, whatever you've seen in terms of ads can then also be you know, linked to something else. And I think that's where technology is catching up at the moment, that, you know, we have the perception that CTV and big screen advertising, it's just to build awareness. But I think we need to change that mind shift, and it actually allows us to have proper actions. And, you know, the technology is in place. We can measure it. We can, you know, there's the sorts of QR codes and all sorts of interactions that actually links purchase opportunities to what you have just seen.
So I'm going to read verbatim from the report now, because there's quite a few numbers here and I don't want to muddle them. So overall, 7 out of 10 viewers recall seeing ads on video streaming platforms. In particular, viewers recall seeing skippable ads, that's 36%. First screen exposure ads were recalled by 33%, and home screen ads were recalled by 32%. Also, 67% of viewers prefer to see ads from different brands. So there's people have their tastes in terms of advertising, and you can see here what they're appreciating. How can brands ensure their ads are effective, do you think, Nina?
So I think if I can just take a step back, I think the most important thing I would say is that we still need to respect the channel for what it is, right? It's a very lean-in channel. It's not like an outdoor billboard ad, that it is in people's face, right? And you cannot avoid it. I think online video streaming, CTVs, OTTs, it's all people make a choice to consume that content. And I think we need to respect it for that. So like I said, it's a very lean-in channel, right? And people make the decision to really tune in. So I think what we also found is that people are not against ads, and they just don't want their viewing experience to be interrupted. Right. But again, this is also for larger screens. Right. So if I sit down on a Saturday evening and I want to watch XYZ, and this is a deliberate decision that I made with my partner on a Saturday evening to watch something, then I need to understand all of this to make sure that I'm not now going in with a non-skippable ad. Right. It would take me out of my viewing experience. It's not what a consumer wants. But that could be different while I'm sitting on the MRT, while I'm watching it on my mobile device. I'm probably in a different mindset. I'm in a different mood. I'm on a different device. I'm by myself. So I think it's really understanding all these nuances, and what makes an ad effective depends on, again, all these parameters that I just said. But I also think, you know, what I said earlier, one of the things we found is that people are really bored before they watch something. So there's an opportunity for brands to come in with, you know, some sort of a surprise effect, right? So it's all these different, you know, ways you can play that when it comes to the execution. And obviously you need to keep in mind the format and the device.
Yeah, definitely. I was interested that 67% of viewers prefer to see ads from different brands. That feels quite natural to me. I was surprised that it was only 67%. I've talked for years on the podcast about the experience I had of having 4 of the same advert in one break in a CTV channel years ago. But Elisa, do you have any thoughts on how brands can be effective and what they can really do to make an impact in CTV?
It's kind of a combination of what makes traditional advertising good and digital, or traditional media good and digital media good, because you have the targeting of digital media, but the trustworthiness of traditional media. So it's not like you can just apply everything you know about linear TV and just be like, okay, we'll do the same principles, right? And in the same vein, it's not like you're gonna take everything you know about advertising on display and apply it to online video. It's really a very unique platform that also has a lot of data, etc. And then again, it's also large format, which is kind of different from what we're all used to now. So really, I would say we don't want to just cut and paste our campaigns from these channels and just like, okay, this is our CTV campaign. We want to really cater it to that platform. And I think also another thing is borrowing also from what Nina mentioned earlier about the surprise effect, because people are bored, I think audio is also really important, because especially if people are doing chores, which actually a good number who are watching alone are doing, when they're watching TV, they're doing chores and then the TV is in the background, right? So you need to have that audio element just to kind of capture their attention. If you're not gonna make them look at you, at least make them want to listen to you. So I think those are things that we really have to pay attention to when advertising on CTV.
Yeah, definitely. You've picked up something on there that again really rings true with me. I love the idea of it being a link between traditional media and digital media. And there has to be scope for innovation there, I think. This is where brands and advertisers need to think, because you can't just recreate the linear model of ad breaks. We have to use that. There's so much opportunity there to really make new and exciting and attractive and useful things for consumers. Nina, what would your one tip be for brands looking to get into the CTV space and succeed?
I think if I can just add one more thing to what you said, sure. You don't have to take the linear model, right? Because technology is more advanced now. We don't have to use the old school model. And that's a good thing, right? Because, and to answer your question, the one big thing is, I would say, measurement, right? I would say, because you can, right? So it's almost a question, why wouldn't you do it? It would be really silly to have all these technology, the advancements in tech and measurement and all the digital capabilities and the way you can activate audiences and all that stuff. And then, so why wouldn't you do it, right? So I think to me, it's really measurement. And that is a massive difference to old school traditional TV, right? Well, we all know how TV gets measured, right? But we don't need to measure CTV in the same space. So I would argue that when you do it, do it well, think about it, but definitely measure in terms of what you're doing.
Yeah, that's the huge opportunity in CTV. It's there. You can, it is knowable and it's quantifiable. Elisa, what would your one super tip be for brands to succeed in CTV?
I would say, maybe this is my bias because this is also what I would personally want to see, cross-channel exposure. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities here. Again, we have the people who are on their phones while watching TV, but there's also people who are watching TV on their phones. And then you can also have, you are watching TV, a QR code comes up. I believe that was like kind of a viral advertisement in the Super Bowl a few years ago. And it's still like people are still talking about it, the bouncing QR code. So there's like a lot of opportunities for CTV to be integrated into like a multi-channel campaign. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that both really solid, really strong pieces of advice there, the measurement piece and also the, the cross-channel activation that's necessary and possible with CTV. Well, we're coming almost to a close. That was a really fantastic conversation. I'm so interested in your research. I'll put a link to it in the show notes because I think the audience will get so much from it. But I'm also looking forward to ATS Singapore, which ExchangeWire have coming up at the start of July, and looking forward to seeing you both there. What are you guys looking forward to about the event?
I think it's the exchange, to be honest. I think what I really enjoy about it the most is that, we're all taken out of our day jobs, for a couple of days, and we can really connect to so many other people in the industry. And I love that. Hearing all the different perspectives, from all the speakers, which is not, like I said, it's a bit of a treat, really, that, we have the opportunity to then get out and hear all these different opinions and the keynote speakers and everyone. But I think it's really talking to people on ground about, their learnings as well. So I always look forward to connecting to all these different groups of people within the industry and sometimes even outside of the industry. So that's really what I'm looking forward to.
Amazing. And you, Elisa?
I was actually looking at the agenda the other day and I was very interested in the fact that I feel like a couple of these sessions were kind of focusing on privacy and clean rooms, if I recall correctly. And I think that's really great. Again, this is coming from my personal bias because, of course, I would also like for my data to be protected, right? But also as a researcher, it is important for us to have the best kind of data, and having these clean rooms or even just advertisers valuing privacy is really important because these are people. You are now getting data from people who know what they're going into. It's not just like, okay, fine, whatever, I'll just accept whatever. These are, again, to go back to what we were talking about earlier about deliberateness, these are now deliberate data of deliberate online browsers, etc. So in my opinion, that is giving us more quality data. And of course, as advertisers and even as researchers, that's great for us because it helps to give us a better understanding of our consumers.
Amazing. Well, I'm very excited to see you both at the event. Thank you both for answering that question. My marketing team will be delighted. But yeah, mainly thank you so much for joining me for the podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you both, and I think there's loads for our audience to get into. So Nina, Alisa, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Looking forward to seeing all of you in ATS Singapore.
Thanks for tuning in to this MadTech podcast special. We'll be back to discuss another hot industry topic soon.